Welcome to the presentation of the first quarter 2012 of the Brunello Cucinelli Group, presentation of the results. All participants are in the listen-only mode. After the first presentation, we will have a chance to ask questions. The financial market will have a chance to ask some questions. Speakers will be Brunello Cucinelli, CEO and President of Brunello Cucinelli, Moreno Ciarafica, CFO, and Pietro Rabolti, Investor Relations Manager. The length, the duration of the conference will be 1 hour approximately. I'd now like to give the floor to the President and CEO of the group, Mr. Brunello Cucinelli. The floor is yours. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great pleasure for me to speak to you. This is the first call for us, so we are also somehow nervous and excited. First of all, we would like to invite you all here as soon as you have a chance to come and visit in our little hilltop hamlet. During the conference call, you will hear a bell ringing, but it's just the bell tower outside the factory, and we are very pleased with that. So what I would like to do is the following. I'll give a 15 minutes general overview, because many of you do not know us very well, and then Moreno Ciarapica, the CFO, will provide you with some further data, and then there will be time for some questions. So I will start by talking with the debut we had at the Stock Exchange on the 27th of April, and I have to say that I have the impression that the financial world has really given a great gift to our culture, our heritage, our spirituality, the devotion to our work, our pride, and also the tolerance that we display on our everyday's work. So thank you very much for the esteem that you have displayed towards us. Well, I have to say that as of today, we have important major international funds, and it is as if we had many Neiman Marcus, Harrods, Goodman and Sachs in our field. So thank you very much, first of all. I'd also like to thank our banks, who for 34 years have been supporting us. And we would like to express our gratitude to them. And to tell you the truth, we have always considered them as partners, so much so that in 2009, when a sort of renovation was taking place, they did all these changes with quickness and happiness. So this was we were very happy with this. Thank you. So now I'd like to spend a couple of minutes to tell you about where I come from. I come from the countryside, so until I was 15 years of age, I was a farmer, and I led this beautiful childhood. My parents never quarreled, never fought between them, so it was very, very nice for me. Then when I was about 15, we moved to the city because my father's dream at that time was to be a worker in a factory, but very often during his working day, he would be offended and looked down upon. So that gave me some sadness somehow. That's why I said to myself, whatever I do in my life, I want to do it for the human dignity. This has always been the dream of a lifetime for me, because at that age I didn't know what would become of me, but that was my dream from the very beginning. Then once we set up our company, we envisaged a form of contemporary capitalism that we dare call humanistic capitalism. You know, a humanistic concepts of dignity and freedom and the possibility of choice of the human being. There is an underlying topic that is very, very interesting. When my father worked, he was not very educated at that time. But since he didn't know much, he accepted everything. Nowadays, the younger generations know everything about us, about our companies, our business, so we have to be always true to ourselves. We have to be true to ourselves when things go well and when things also don't go too well. Well, I have to say that during these years of studies, I started feeling as a guardian of my company. You know, today we are holding our conference call, and we are talking to you from the tower of the little hamlet dating back to the 14th century. So those who designed it so many centuries ago were thinking ahead of thousands of years of centuries. This is a strong concept of guardianship for me. then in our company we set these rules that I'm very fond of, and these rules stem from our Umbrian heritage, from St. Francis, also St. Benedict, when St. Benedict says you should try and be very strict and very sweet, a demanding master and a loving father. And I follow, I abide by these rules. Now there's 720 employees in our company. Everybody starts working at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we finish at 6, and no one is allowed to work after 6 because the human being needs to freshen up. And if a human being has time to rest, then the morning after they'll be curious and creative. We have always believed in a product that should be extremely high quality, high craftsmanship. This is basically the same culture of our the land we come from. It's always been so. We have been active in the knitwear and apparel sector for 50 years. And this is the idea we have always supported in order to have a very high quality product. But in order to do that, you need the human being to be part of it. Creativity cannot always be managed, but craftsmanship and quality can be actually managed and governed. So why have we decided to go public, you might ask? What was our need? Well, I'm 58 years of age. My daughters are 21 and 29 respectively. And for all my life, that's the only job I have been doing. We have decided to go public to be even more international, to be even more open, in order to have some partners, guardians, investors beside us who can make this company survive and thrive for the next 50 or 100 years, because I think this is the dream that everybody of us has, that is for one's company not to die when the founder dies. We went public in order to be stronger. We didn't carry that much debt. At the end of 2011, we had more or less 1 year EBITDA. But obviously, since now we are slightly stronger, that we have no debt, we can definitely seize some opportunities that are being offered to us by this fascinating and ever-growing world. The major economists worldwide, and I have to say here that I have always felt a lot of respect for my neighbor's work, well, these economists say that if you go public, your company lives longer. And last but not least, talking about my age, I've always thought that you do not inherit a company, you inherit the property, the ownership. So I hope that my daughters one day, with their 62% stake, that will be able to lead this company together with you, investors, partners, new managers, new guardians of humanity. So this is our dream, and this is the reason why we're here and why we went public. Thank you very much for all that you have been doing for us, for us, and for this debut. So what do we believe in product-wise? We have always believed in one single brand, and luckily enough, we are quite widely recognized, and we have been acknowledged as belonging to the luxury pyramid. You're all aware of this pyramid. At the tip of the pyramid, at the top of it, there is absolute luxury. And yesterday, I saw that Bain, at the Alta Gamma meeting, said that absolute luxury in the next 3 years should have quite a positive trend. But they always talk about niche within the niche of absolute luxury. I still believe in this. I've always believed in this. I believe in luxury, craftsmanship, quality, but not too widely distributed, not too commoditized. We are an apparel company, and this is very, very important, what I'm about to say. You know, at the end of the 90s, Italy was extremely strong in the luxury ready-to-wear business. That luxury ready-to-wear, the only the major brands like Armani, Versace, Valentino. Well, this is what we were acknowledged by in the world. Now, this is slightly missing. This is lacking in the world. So we stem from an apparel tradition. I'd like to tell you what the president of Neiman Marcus, Karin Katz, said to me. She said to me and the following when she came to Milan last February. She said, "You see, I have maybe 10 times the offer, the supply of accessories that I actually need. But as a matter of fact, I do not have enough chic luxury apparel. And this bids very well for our future and also for the future of our Italy. Because, you know, dealing with apparel is slightly more different, more difficult than dealing with accessories, because the very same accessory can be sold from Los Angeles to Shanghai, whereas apparel is something different. It has sizes, different differences, and so on and so forth. We are very happy the way we are acknowledged. We also do accessories. Last year we had 11% in accessories. This year we might reach 13-14% in accessories. We might reach 17-18% in the next 2-3 years. But what we would like to do is we would like to still always be an apparel company that today has 32% menswear and the rest women's wear. It is it is very well balanced. Maybe menswear could be stronger, but you know, men tend to spend half of what women spend in shopping. But the most important thing is that, according to experts, the men's taste is very online with the women's taste. So in our shop, we can basically provide the same taste in menswear and women's wear. And also, it's a very cross-age product, from 25 to 75 years of age. Well, of course, I know that the price is quite high, but I'm not sorry when I'm being told that my items are costly. Well, I don't like to hear that my items are dear, because at least in Italian, dear, caro, means that you have sort of exploited something, whereas this is not my case. So I'd like to supply an item of apparel that is very well manufactured. So, but once again, I'm not talking about taste, because it's not up to me to judge taste. What about collections? We have two collections, because we believe in one single brand that will stay always the same forever. We have the winter collection that is very, very important. We start delivering in June.
Pensavo di andare troppo veloce.
I apologize. I just asked the interpreter if everything was going well. I apologize. At the moment, I can't speak English, but I hope I can speak English very shortly. At the moment, I devoted myself to philosophy. So the winter collection is very important, and we deliver quite ahead of time, so that already from the beginning of the month, you can have your collection in the shops. Whereas the second important collection, which is made up 60% is spring and summer, and 40% reassortment, which means that on November the 1st we start delivering in two countries like America after Thanksgiving, at the end of November, and then at the end of November other products start to be delivered. We have always believed, and we have invested very much in the visual merchandising business. You know, visual merchandising, you see, is very, very important and for women, but it is really indispensable for menswear. And my distinguished master teacher, Ralph Lauren, when you see some mannequins of Ralph Lauren, it is really a pleasure to see. They're always very chic and very well matched and fitting. So visual merchandising is paramount for me. Then internal collections are put together by myself, together with five people of first level and five people of second level. My time, 70% of my time, is devoted to visual and product. And then we have more or less 90 people working explicitly on the collection, which means that every day in our factory, we can manufacture 50 prototypes, which gives us the ability to change things even on the very same afternoon, to make some modifications in the afternoon. So the average age of the company is 39, managers average age 39 of the 15 top management, and if I called myself out and my CFO called himself out, and also if my CCO would call himself out, Fabio Gnocchi, maybe you might have met him, he's 52, I'm 58, and the CFO is 50, so if we called ourselves out, the average age would be 37, so I can say that our company is quite young. Now, just briefly about the manufacturing system, because it's very important. We manufacture over 80% of our items in the Umbria region, then something in Tuscany, Marche and Veneto region. There are still some manufacturing pockets that are very, very high in craftsmanship. I talk about Umbria, why? Because these skilled hands have been there for ages. We have 8,000 people working, manufacturing for high-quality luxury from apparel to knitwear. And out of these 8,000 people, 2,300 work exclusively for us. These 2,300 people account for 330 micro companies from 7 to 9 employees each, independent companies. And I'd like to add something interesting here. The average age of their owners is 41 years of age, which means quite slightly very young companies. And then the average age of employees is 40, which means that we have very high quality artisans that are absolutely not old. And then we pay them 20% more on average vis-a-vis the market. And now I'd like to spend a minute on this because I'm very, very keen on it. Why do we pay these people 20% more so that they can lead a normal, an ordinary life? And an ordinary life in Umbria means to earn 40,000 euros a year in a family-run business, which might be 200,000 euros in London. And then young people can be attracted to this kind of profession. But where do we find this 20% more from? Well, an item that comes out of the factory wholesale at 350 euros, it includes 60 euros of manual skills. And when I talk about manual skills, I'm talking about manual work, not machinery. So this 350 euros item is then sold for 1,000 euros at Via della Spiga, Milan, or in London. So my question is it not possible that we cannot find 20 euros, 25 euros extra between 350 and 1,000 so that these people can earn 80, 85 euros instead of 60? So, and this is our strength. So there lies our strength for the future. So believe me, these craftsmen are our future. They are our skilled hands, and they're also our specific feature. Where do we sell our products? Well, we can say that we have had these very same 1,000 multi-brands in the world always. They can be Harrods in London, Neiman Marcus, or some others in New York and Tokyo. Then who are these multi-brand clients? Well, I've always had the impression that multi-brands are the real guardians of the brand. Why am I saying so? And then we'll also talk about the monobrand segment. Because when Giovine Moretti or Harrods or Goldman Sachs come to Milan to see to view the collections, believe me, the judgment they express on the collections is very, very harsh, very straightforward. But this is very helpful because that way your product can be reassured to be contemporary all the time. When Harrods decides to give you a hard shop within its department store, it means that your brand is contemporary. And now Neiman Marcus decided to supply us with 9 beautiful spaces for next winter, and before they had been assigned to another Italian brand, and they are among Hermes, Chanel, and this kind of brands, which means that the brand is healthy. But if the multi-brand client gives you this kind of concession, then this is really helpful for us, so in order to innovate our product. So we have had 1,000 multi-brands. As of the end of the year, we had 60 monobrand stores in very special locations, because this has always been our spirit. What would we like to have in a couple of years? What do we envisage? We'd like this to go down to half. Because I'd like to give an example. If in Hamburg we have a beautiful multi-brand store like Ungar, someone who has been in the history of opera for a long time, and then you have a beautiful corner in there, which is very well taken care of with the visual merchandising, that's where you have your own monobrand. It's very similar, and this is a very special thing to me. I'd like to talk to you about revenues and then the future in China. I have been going to China for the last 26 years. As you might imagine, I go there to purchase, to source my cashmere. I can't say that I know China deep down, but, well, quite a lot. Well, we started to go to this country and bring in there the very same culture that we brought to America and Europe, so the very same collection everywhere. Then obviously when we manufacture a shirt, then it is 2 centimeters shorter because their build is different, but this is just a technical issue, not a taste issue. So that's what we would like to do. We would like to go there and export the very same taste. Why am I saying this? Because somehow I'm concerned about something. A couple of months ago, we went to Paris to choose the fabrics for spring-summer next year. And at the end of the first meeting, there was about 12 people, 12 staff. We said to ourselves, why do many collections of fabrics have a Chinese-like taste? Because obviously there is a trend ongoing to try and please the companies that have a large business in China. But my impression is that, as opposed to what is being said, that the European and the U.S. markets are flat, well, I'm not an expert to say whether these markets are flat or not, but if your collection is not modern and contemporary, no one buys your goods. So we must be modern, we must be contemporary, and in these very important reference markets. The Chinese, the rich Chinese, they do travel a lot. They travel to Milan, to New York. They want to see the product with their eyes. They want to see the visual merchandising. So we want to repeat to you the following. We have a nice project in China, but we want to bring there the same culture that we brought to America 20 years ago and Italy and Europe. So we need to have an international collection and a collection that is appreciated by Europeans and Americans at first. We have this Chinese partner, this 43-year-old guy with a very beautiful company, 150 million in sales, 1,000 employees, more or less. So he deals with also Italian luxury companies. And I said to him, I'd like to mention 10 names of very beautiful, nice companies, and you have to tell me which of them belong to the luxury pyramid and which don't. And I have to say that he put 7 of these names in the aspirational luxury category. And I asked him, why are they not in the top luxury? And he said, because they are too widely distributed. So my message is, I believe in a product that it is distributed with a lot of care. Consequently, we believe in a growth that is gracious, sustainable, respectful. A growth that might be 9% when things do not go too well, then the following year 12 or 13%. But when we open a store, we must be very, very careful. We waited for 4 years in order to land a great location in Miami, in the right prestigious location. Then we are opening in Aspen next September in the right location. So this is my message. I believe in a company that grows, always maintaining high quality, high craftsmanship, and hopefully high taste, in a company that believes in a not too widely distributed product, because that's where the difference is made. So to wind up, up until yesterday, this is the only kind of work I have been doing for the last 34 years. It's true that until I was 25, I did nothing. I spent my life in bars and cafes. So we can say that I didn't work for 10 years. But in the last 30 years, that's the only job that I've been doing. And now, from the IPO onwards, I've only been doing this. And yesterday I was speaking to Andrea Guerra, and he was asking me, how are things going? And I said, I don't know, but today I'm busy with my collection. I said, that was yesterday. So what I would like to say is the following. I have been doing only this. I'd like to keep on doing only this. I said to my young managers the other day, I'd like to be with you until the day when you seriously look at me in the eyes and say to me, your time is over, and then I will step back. This is my idea. We think we lie on very healthy foundations. We wouldn't like to perform any acquisitions because we would like to grow with this brand, with this lifestyle, with this visual, with very same things. Ahead of me, I see a very fascinating world. A world that is fascinated by the very nice Italian luxury ready-to-wear. Obviously, we must dare be creative, fresh, contemporary, very high craftsmanship, but at the same time, I'd also like to give moral and economic dignity to craftsman's work. So maybe in 50 years of time, you might. How can you possibly ask your children to be an artisan for 980 euros a month? It's not possible. So, what if we actually give economic dignity to these workers with that 20% more I mentioned before? Well, that changes things, and that 20% does not change your financial statement. So, as I said to the major investors who came to visit me to Solomeo, what I'm asking you, try and join us in order to be guardians of our company for 10, 20 years, knowing down well that we would like to stay at the very top of the pyramid, and hopefully we will stay there, but we do not want to commoditize the market. So I was a farmer when I was young, not very far from here. Solomeo is actually my wife's hamlet, and I don't think I'm a snob. But I'd like to tell you what my client said last week. She flew from New York to Saint-Tropez. Oh, sorry, the speaker corrects himself, to Cannes with her private jet. And she said to the shop manager, Philippe, in Cannes, and she said, tell Brunello that if he opens too many shops, I won't shop at Cucinelli any longer. So I believe in an exclusive product. I believe in a gracious growth. We have an open world ahead of us. We are present in 52 countries as of today, and we can grow with grace, so to speak. And then last but not least, as a company, we would like to dedicate one day a year to you investors with your families, and then one day devoted to you with analysts. So come here, you can come here in the afternoon, then we can organize some entertainment for your families. We work together, we have dinner together, and then you leave the day after. This is, I'd like to say this to analysts and to investors, because I'd really like you to live the company firsthand, but also what happens in the hamlet after work in the evening. So to conclude, we have enjoyed an interesting quarter, and now Moreno will provide you with all the details, but just tell you that we grew by 17% in terms of revenues and by 27% in terms of EBITDA, so we had quite a good profit. And I'd like to read what I said today to the press. I said we feel that there are very high opportunities in terms of products, and I'm reading this out of a communique. So there is a lot of good attitude towards the product and the way in which the product is displayed, and also in terms of lifestyle that shows a very high quality, high craftsmanship, and high contemporary made in Italy. So by nature, I've always been an optimist and also a realistic optimist, so we envisage a healthy 2012, but I'd like to tell you that while I speak on a daily basis to my clients and friends worldwide, I think that there is quite a good ambience around. I was speaking to some New York people yesterday, and I think there are good times ahead. And then I'd like to spend a special word on my special Italy. We would like to work and we would like to thrive. And as opposed to January and February, during the fashion shows. Well, at that time, the spirit was more negative, whereas now there is a very healthy awareness, economic and also from the civil and the moral viewpoint, and this kind of awareness, and we are planning for the future. So I don't think things look too bad. So thank you for the moment. I give the floor to Mr. Ciarapica, the CFO, who has been with me for the last 20 years, and then we can open the floor for questions. I apologize for the length and the duration of my presentation, but this was the first time for me that I presented my first quarter results, and since many of you do not know me, I wanted to introduce the company properly. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'll try and be as quick as possible in order to leave you some time for questions. Let's start with page number three of the presentation you have that has been distributed to you, in order to analyze the revenue breakdown in first quarter 2012. But before this, I'd like to remind you all that the first quarter results are affected by typical seasonal elements, typical in our business, so they cannot possibly represent the development of the whole financial year. And also for Brunello Cucinelli and many other companies in the field, the first and in particular the third quarter represent the two main quarters, both in terms of revenues and of profitability, followed by the fourth and the second quarter. Just as an introduction. Now, moving over to the results as of 31st of March 2012, the Brunello Cucinelli Group enjoyed net revenues for 67 million, then with an increase by 17.1% vis-à-vis the first quarter. So basically similar to the change calculated using the same exchange rate of the March the 1st. As for the weight of international markets, it has kept on growing. At the end of March, it accounted for 69% of net total revenues vis-à-vis the 63% of the first quarter 2011. By analyzing the graphs in the bottom part of the slide, we see that the weight of the domestic market went down by 6 percentage points, going down from 37% of the first quarter 11 to 31% of this first quarter, with but quite stable in absolute terms. And this is basically in line with what we were expecting, and we are very pleased with this result. So obviously we enjoyed a very important growth in terms of exports, where mainly in North America we booked a growth by 30.6%, and the weight of America went up from 21% to 23%. The rest of the world went up from 8% to 11%. The weight of Greater China went up from 3% to 4%, and in rest of Europe was flat at 31%, thanks to a growth in line with the revenues forecast. Now, moving over to page 5 of our presentation, we have the revenue by distribution channel. The weight of the monobrand stores, that is a result of the sum between the retail and the franchising channel, was 34%. Vis-à-vis the 24% that was the weight of the first quarter 2011. As a consequence, the multi-brand wholesale channel, which includes our presence in the multi-brand stores and in the most important luxury department stores, is now equal to 66%. Let's now move on to slide number 6. Let's now move on to slide number 6, where we try and analyze the drivers of the growth of the retail channel. The increase by 53% was driven both by the 10 new direct openings between the 1st of April 11 and 31st March 12, and also by the major growth in existing stores as of 31st of March 2011, which also in the first quarter of the financial year was still a plus 18%, a double-digit growth, which was also a significant growth in the monobrand franchising channel, plus 74%, which further confirms the strength of the brand, which sees an increase of its network thanks to 6 new openings, net of 4 conversions of franchise stores into DOS stores. I'd like to remind you that on top of this, that this result was driven by the shipment of products that were already happened for the franchise stores that are about to open in the next weeks, or which opened lately after the end of the quarter. We're talking about, for example, Shanghai and Hong Kong. As for the development of monobrand channel, well, you can find a synopsis in slide number 7. So we can conclude by saying that the wholesale channel is in line with our expectations because it maintains its focus on exclusivity of distribution. Let's now move on slide number 8 in order to comment on the major items of the income statement under the net revenues line. As we have already said, the results of the single quarters are influenced by the seasonality, so the first quarter does not automatically represent an automatic evolution of the results. The results of the first quarter were affected by an extraordinary capital gain generated by the transfer of a rent contract of the Milan store at the Via della Spiga number 15 after our move to Via della Spiga number 30 to a larger shop. This operation generated €1 million in non-recurring revenues that you can find accounted for in the line other operating income. Since this capital gain is a non-recurring one, I'll focus my analysis on the data net of this operation, excluding this capital gain. This reclassification that takes into account the exclusion of non-recurring operation, you can find it on the right part of the slide. And I'd like to add that in the summary of the press release, there was a slight mistake that it is about to be redressed with a new press release where the increase of the net profit was by 37%. I'd like to mention this because there was a slight mistake in the first version of the press release. As for the first quarter 2012, after excluding this capital gain, the growth of revenues went hand in hand with a significant growth of margins, with an increase of first margin from 49.1% to 51.2%. So, an increase by 210 BPs. I'd like to remind you that our first margin includes raw material consumptions and third-party manufacturing and also R&D costs. So, as a matter of fact, this figure is 2 points smaller than the gross margin itself. In the first quarter 2012, the group EBITDA grew by 28%, 27.6 to be accurate, with an incidence on sales of 16.5%, an improvement by 130 basis points vis-à-vis the first quarter 11, whereas the operating profit was 11.4 million, 14.7% of sales of revenues. Then on page 9, we analyze some variables of the income statement, and we basically focus on the EBITDA delta and change. The EBITDA growth over the quarter was definitely driven by the major increase of our first margin, which benefited in particular from a better channel mix. that was favored by the growing, increasing weight of retail, which, as you might know, offers better margins than other distribution channels. And this happened as a consequence of openings and as a consequence of a good like-for-like growth. Whereas over the same time, the price effect and the price mix effect was more or less plus 4.5%, that we can consider the standard growth for the Brunello Cucinelli brand over time. Also, in terms of costs, well, cost structure, it was impacted by the evolution of the channel mix. In the personal cost includes the cost of by the to staff the new doors, and also the cost of the corporate structure reinforcement, re-strengthening, because in the second half of 2011, the corporate structure was strengthened in order to support future development. The increase in personal cost impacted by 2 billion euros in the quarter, weighting for by 13% on net revenues against 12.6% in the previous quarter. In terms of number of employed people, there is an increase by 100 units, over 60% of which for the DOS network, staff to staff the DOS network. As for other important cost items, there are very strictly linked to the retail network development. Well, we're talking about the increase of rents in the first quarter 12. They accounted for 3.4% of sales vis-à-vis 2.2% in the first quarter 2011. Vice versa, there was a decrease in terms of weight of agent fees. They went down from 6.3% to 4.7% of turnover, always due to the channel mix change. As for A&P change, well, their weight is flat, more or less 5% of net revenues, and the same as last year, 2011. As for the bottom part of the slide, I'd like to say that the financial expenses, financial charges were more or less the same vis-à-vis last quarter, and there was a reduction in the tax rate from 37.8% to 34.1% due to the change in geographic breakdown, which is gradually shifting towards foreign countries, therefore enjoying a lower tax rate, and also due to the impact of the recent Italian laws in financial terms, in particular the lower weight of the regional tax of the IRAP. And over this, in the last quarter, there was no positive effect of the capital increase of the so because the IPO took place on the April the 27th, so it didn't express its potential in the first quarter. Let's now analyze the balance sheet on page 10. Well, here it is important to remark that the total shareholders' equity was 44.4 million euros before the positive effect of IPO, vis-à-vis the 38 million euros as of 31st of March 2011, with a net invested capital of 102.2 million euros. Now, very quickly, moving to slide number 11, we can see that the increase of the working capital over this time, in line with our expectation, is definitely due to a seasonality effect. But it was always influenced by two factors which contributed to increase the inventories. And these factors will be gradually less important over the year. On the one hand, we started manufacturing earlier than before. Therefore, we are manufacturing more items, and only partly do we increase our workforce, because if we anticipate our production by a couple of weeks, we just make our production time longer. And then we had 10 more openings on top of the 4 openings that will be happening in the next few weeks. Well, this also contributed to have more goods in the monobrand stores. Now, moving over to page 12, we see the net financial position, which was 57.8 million at the end of March, vis-à-vis the 48 million euros at the end of 2011. And this mirrors partly the increase in the circulating capital, but also the anticipated payout of dividends on fiscal year 2011 that we paid in the first quarter this year for 2.5 million euros. Once again, we have to say that the positive effect of the IPO proceedings will be perceived in the second quarter. And then, to end, on page 13, you can see the analysis of investments that were made over the quarter. 2 million euros for the commercial network and 1.2 million were devoted to the logistics, the headquarters of Sonoer, and the maintenance capex. I'd now give the floor to you for any questions. Brunello and I will be happy to answer your questions. Please, maybe not more than two questions each. Here, now Brunello speaking. I'd like to add something very, very important. In January, February, when our clients and our shop managers came to see us, there was a good feeling about the collection. What does it mean? It means that as of the 1st of June, the second half of the year, in the stores, we will have beautiful collections. And this is really a good sign of hope for us. I really wanted to say this, to convey this message, because we don't know what the world will be like in a few months, but we know for sure that we will have quality items in our stores. We'll now start the Q&A session. The first question in Italian is by Stefano Corneliani from Intermonte. Good evening. I have a couple of questions for you. The first one has to do with the order backlog and portfolio fall-winter, because you just said that from June on there will be very high-quality collections in the stores. So I'd just like to know what kind of reaction in terms of orders you had in preliminarily. And the second question about warehouse. Well, on a year-on-year, that growth, how much is it due to the retail development, and how much is it due to having anticipated manufacturing times? Well, as for the warehouse, Stefano, I'd like to reply. Brunello is speaking, and this is a very interesting thing, because the more you strike a very strong relationship up with your suppliers, Loro Piana e Zegna in this case, by fully understanding their needs, the better it is. Just an example, making an order of raw materials on Monday evening, then the production starts on Tuesday. If you start on a Tuesday, if you place the order on a Tuesday, it is worked out on a Friday, which means that if you cooperate with your suppliers, you can have quite good timing in delivery, and this goes to the benefit of final shipments and delivery. And then in terms of figures, the CFO says, as you can see in the presentation, when costs for raw materials are analyzed, we see in the first quarter 2012 there is a purchasing of raw material for 15.3 million and 10.6 million in the first quarter 2011. So there was an increase by 44% that obviously is not the result of a seasonal increase, but it is just an anticipation. So these higher purchases of raw materials anticipating the production of by a couple of weeks by collecting winter orders, this translated into more raw materials in warehouses. As for monobrand stores, 10 more stores opened as of 31st March 2012 compared to the 2011, and then four other shops to be opened in the next few weeks, so 14 extra DOS, and this turns into 10 million for the average stocks. So, and then as for the first question, the winter orders backlog, we can say that we are talking about a single-digit growth. So more or less single-digit growth. Thank you very much. If you want to ask a question, you can press star 1 on your phone. The next question is by Chiara Rotelli, Mediobanca. Yes, hello everybody. I have two questions. The organic growth that you have spoken about for the first quarter, DOS 18%. How did Italy do, or is there a strong difference geographically speaking? Second question, in terms of order collection for fall winter and in terms of current trends of summer spring, how is Italy doing? Well, this is a very interesting question. I'll reply, Brunello says. Yes, I want to answer this question because, as I was saying before, in Italy we breathe a different atmosphere, different ambience compared to a couple of months ago. And this is it means becoming more aware of the situation. And another thing I wanted to add is that in America, summer sales, in 15 days they will be on sale, and the same also goes for Northern Europe. In Italy they last a few days longer, but summer sales didn't go bad at all. So this basically tells us that if the collection is attracting, then you can enjoy a nice season. But I'm very, very glad of this awareness that has taken root in Italy. And what about the figures, 18% of like for like? What about Italy? How did Italy do? And this mid-low single-digit growth fall winter in Italy, is it positive in Italy or negative? Well, in terms of winter order portfolio vis-a-vis a less interesting result in Italy, we have a very interesting result in terms of export, and this goes just to highlight and follow the development of the first quarter that we already mentioned. In terms of like for like, we can say that it is positive, and in all the different areas we obviously envisage three areas. We have America, that's United States, the most interesting result there. Then we have a positive good result in Europe nevertheless, and also positive results in Italy too, although it's less important. Let's say that our monobrand stores, we have many important monobrand stores and resort stores that enjoy very prestigious locations. Then we have the Milan shops, and 50% of our sales in Milan is with foreigners and 50% with Italians, and we're very pleased with that. Of course, foreigners tend to come from the former Soviet Union, but, you know, doing 50% of your business with Italians is quite good. Italy also shows a lot in terms of taste, and for us, Italy will be the second country this year for us after America, but in terms of taste, it does show that the brand is healthy if it works well in Italy. But I'd like to say to everybody that we, Moreno, I and Pietro, are available for you, so send us emails, you can call me, you can call us. We're always here because we're busy with the collection. We do not want to hasten you, but whatever kind of needs you have, we are available. I'd like to devote 15% of my time at the very least to you, partners, investors, analysts, so that we can grow together. Gianluca Pacini, Banca IMI. Yes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to know a bit more about the expansion strategy, the distribution. You said 10 DOS until today, and then in the very near future, 4 extra DOS. When you talk about the desire that you do not want to be too widely distributed, I think that your new openings will happen in Asia, in the Far East, in the next quarters. And is this the plan you have in mind? And then secondly, whether some further conversions from franchising to DOS are also in your mind? Gianluca Brunello would like to answer. As for conversions, no, we do not have any other in mind. But of course, where do we use the franchised formula? We will open a franchised store in Bucharest because we don't want to have a DOS there. So we have a beautiful multi-brand there. It has been one of our accounts for many years. And they want to put together a franchisee with a couple of companies because maybe having a franchising in Bucharest is too early, so it's better to be with other companies. So in large companies, we only do DOS. We are about to open one in Chicago, in Aspen, in Madrid. These are all DOS stores. Florence, Venice, all these new stores are DOS stores. As for franchised stores, they are the best formula, the best solution in some countries that are not very easy to manage, where the same it's the very same multi-brand, the open franchise. I'd like to say something. In the former Soviet Union, there are about 100 beautiful multi-brand stores, clients with 2,000 square meters stores that are very particular, that offers a very good image, and being present there is very, very valuable. And then with some of these multi-brands, you also set up a franchising formula. Yes, I'd like to add, the CFO says, that in terms of conversions, like the prospectus says, there is the Chinese project. So in the second half of this year, as in the offering, as you can see in the documentation, seven conversion from franchising to DOS will take place, and then some openings are in sight. But it is quite a careful project that will be rolled out in the next few years. This same thing we imagine also for Japan, and in the documentation you see that we have already signed an agreement whereby in 3 years we will convert our franchise into DOS, but there is no strategy in terms of converting European franchising into DOS, because for us this is the perfect structure. As for the first question in terms of exclusivity, well, I have to say that our project is all but exaggerated. It's not exaggerated at all in terms of openings. We think that a prestigious multi-brand with our products, a sort of dedicated space, and a mono-brand in the very same marketplace, they can definitely coexist. They enhance and boost each other mutually, and they offer a positive image of our brand to the market. And if I might add something, I think that things are going pretty well in Italy too. I think that in terms of like for like, the double digit growth of the first quarter is in line also with the first 2 months of sales, so it was the same value. Are you talking about April and May? Well, there are no basic differences in April and May. No, spring didn't go bad at all, Gianluca. So, as I was saying before, you do feel a different kind of spirit in the air, so compared to the first months of the year. So obviously you need to be also proficient in terms of visual merchandising. This is essential because it really, really makes the difference. The way you display your product is very valuable. Thank you. Next question, a follow-up by Stefano Cornegliani, Intermonte. Good evening again. Just a clarification about the question on the fall-winter order portfolio. You spoke about a growth in terms of orders by medium single digit. Does this figure include only the sell-in projection on wholesale, so both monobrand and multi-brand, or does it include also a sell-in forecast or projection at the retail network directly managed from the group? Well, it is the first of the two, wholesale, monobrand and multi-brand. And the retail, it doesn't know retail. And how binding is this kind of indication on the closure the end of the year? What kind of restocking capacity do you have? Well, I'd like to say something here, because Brunello says, because I come from the production manufacturing, we are very good deliverers by nature. And what have we done in our direct stores? The initial order, which should be 100, we put together an order that is worth 90, and since we have specific special shipment on a weekly basis from all DOS all over the world, we send these restockings that we do over the 21 years, because we always work during August. We go to do on holiday in different times, because August has become a very important month for the fashion world. And if one year we could reach 10 or 15, then we could optimize sellouts, because if you have restocking, means the sellout is very, very high. And at the same time, that way we could have always the best goods in the store. Well, yes, I'd like to add that even in the wholesale channel, the visibility percentage of the sales of restocking the next few months, it's always the same. So 90% of the acquired orders on the main campaign, and more or less 10% of in terms of our capacity to face restocking. Thank you very much. I'd like to add something. If there are no further questions, we can close here. But I'd like to apologize, because we had to postpone our conference call by 1 hour because we had a technical issue with computers. So we'd like to apologize once again, but it was our first time. We are very honored, and we would like to invite you all here, unless there are any further questions. There is one further question by Flavio Cereda, Merrill Lynch. Good afternoon. As a matter of fact, it is a very quick and easy question. The retail development in terms of DOS and monobrand franchise, are you in line with your expectations in terms of what you envisaged at the end of last year? Can you give us also some details in terms of figures and also locations for the end of the year? Yes, we are definitely in line with our expectations, and we can say that as of today, between DOS and franchise stores, we have secured 90% of our expectations in terms of contracts. So we are just securing the very few last agreements, and we think that in terms of DOS stores and franchise stores, we can go between 75 that are already secured, and then further two further that could add to the could be added thanks to the further contracts. And that number of DOS, in terms of DOS, the DOS openings between 10 and 12, and 9 conversions from franchise stores to DOS stores. Very well. Flavio, there is also the project we are putting together in China. Everything is fine. We are just waiting for an authorization from the government to start. We hope that we think that this might happen as of the 1st of July. Then if there's a delay of a couple of months, nothing matters, because it means they will be wholesale and then it will turn into monobrand and retail. So there might be a 1 month gap between wholesale in retail, but the project we have with this very young partner is very fascinating, because this guy looks somehow a European. The way he dresses is very into the fashion world. When we do visual together, we enjoy having him there too, and we discuss things together. And what I was very impressed by is that Chinese rich gentlemen want to dress in a sporty, casual way. They do not want to wear formal suits. Well, that's lucky for you. That's good for you. Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you, Flavio. Paola Carboni, Equita SIM, next question. Good morning. I apologize with the operator, because I insisted on dialing the same number. So I'd like to ask the following. Well, since We do not have a quarter breakdown for last year. We cannot really do not have a basis for making comparison. The 18% plus 18% in terms of like for like that was reported in the first quarter, can it be considered as an indication for the development for the rest of the year, or will it be more challenging in spring and summer? Does spring-summer anticipate a softer trend? What kind of forecast can we make in terms of this kind of percentage or this figure? Well, everything is following the expectation. The collection was very beautiful, so everything went very well as we expected. So we envisage quite a good 2012. So maybe you should not use this 18% figure as a year reference. We have a slightly different two-digit figure for the year. This is just the quarter. So our project is slightly different with lower figures somehow. I'd like you to bear this in mind. This is what we expect. I'd like to add that in terms of our expectations, as of today, we are confident in the estimates of the analysts that we have already mentioned, the ones that were also published. Thank you very much. The questions are over. Thank you very much. Good evening, and apologize once again for the delay. Please call us, send us emails. We'll reply as soon as possible.